Hi everybody, my name is Mr. Barlow and welcome to episode 22 of the VCE Biology Podcast. This episode covers part of Unit 2, Area of Study 2, and I'll be talking about population dynamics. Now a population is a number of organisms of the same species that live in a defined geographical area. So it might be, for example, the number of fish in a pond, and there may be 100 fish in that pond. Now, populations of organisms can actually explode to huge numbers, or it's also possible for populations to decline to the point of extinction. So they're actually really variable populations of organisms. Now, when we study the population of a species, we study the distribution of the species, and that's where it lives, and we also study the abundance of the species, so that's how many individuals there are in the species. But abundance can actually refer to the number of organisms in a single local population, so like I said, maybe fish in a little pond, or it can correspond to the total number of all organisms in all populations of a species all around the world. So measures of abundance can actually be quite different depending on exactly what you're measuring. So there are three factors that determine the distribution and abundance of all organisms. And they are the characteristics of the environment, the characteristics of the organism, and the interactions between organisms. So if we think about the characteristics of the environment, we could use an example of maybe putting a tribe of chimpanzees into a desert. And if we put chimpanzees into a desert, yeah, they might survive, but the population's probably not going to explode or increase at all. It's probably, in fact, going to decline, and they might, in fact, all die out. But if we put a tribe of chimpanzees into a tropical rainforest where there's heaps of food and heaps of places to live, then the population might increase. Now, if we think about the characteristics of organisms, if we had some fish and we put some fish into a rainforest up into the trees, then the fish are probably going to die because the characteristics of a fish are not really suited, so they don't have the right features to survive in a tree. But if we put a fish in the ocean, then the population of fish is probably going to increase because fish are really well adapted to be in the ocean. Now let's think about the third one, the interactions between organisms. So let's say we did in fact put a bunch of fish in the ocean and we put them right near a whole bunch of sharks. Then the fish probably aren't gonna do super duper well when they're near a whole bunch of sharks. Obviously because the sharks, you know, the predators, are probably gonna eat all of the fish or most of the fish. So there wouldn't be as many fish and the population of fish would decrease. But if we dumped a whole bunch of fish in the ocean right near some itty-bitty fish for them to eat, then their population might increase because that's a really good environment for them there. They can interact with the organisms there to their advantage. And so we can see that the distribution and abundance of organisms depends on the characteristics of the environment, the characteristics of the organism, and the interactions between organisms. Now, the size of a population is affected by four factors: births, deaths, immigration, and emigration. So, birth. So, if you've got more organisms that are born, then the population is going to increase. You know, death. If more organisms die, then the population is going to decrease. Immigration, which is organisms coming into the population from another area. If you have more of that happening, then the population is going to increase. And emigration is organisms moving out of the population. Well, if you get that happening, then the population is going to decrease. And so population change can actually be represented by a special equation. And that is, population change is equal to births minus deaths plus immigrants minus emigrants. Now, in theory, if a population was to increase its numbers by the same amount every cycle or every generation, it would experience what's called exponential growth. So an example of exponential growth is some bacteria can actually divide once every 20 minutes under the right conditions. So if there are no other factors involved, one single bacteria, after 20 minutes you'd have two, after 40 minutes you'd have four, 60 minutes you'd have eight, and then, you know, after eight you'd have another 20 minutes, 16, and then 32, and then 64, then 128, and so on and so forth. And what would happen is, after just one single day, so after 24 hours, you would actually end up with 1 trillion bacteria. So that's a really great example of exponential growth. One organism becoming 1 trillion organisms in a really short period of time. But that never actually happens in real life because there are always lots of other factors involved. So although all populations do have the potential for exponential growth, fortunately, they're all affected by what's called a limiting factor. So a limiting factor is something which limits the abundance and distribution of an organism, and often it's food. So, you know, if there's not enough food for a population of organisms to eat, then some of them are going to die, and what happens then is the populations will actually eventually reach a constant size, and that's called the carrying capacity of the ecosystem. So they'll reach, you know, a stable level. So in terms of an ecosystem's carrying capacity for a particular species of, you know, organism, the numbers of organisms, there can be population explosions and the numbers of organisms can go above that carrying capacity, but then, you know, there'll be these limiting factors which will eventually, or often quite quickly, bring the total population down to that ecosystem's carrying capacity. So, you know, a population can fluctuate around a carrying capacity, but the population will never exceed it for long periods of time. So when you're learning about you know, these population dynamics in textbooks, for example, you'll see these exponential shaped graphs, and you'll see these S-shaped graphs, which illustrate when organisms have reached their carrying capacity. But in the real world, populations rarely fit these precise mathematical models. So populations always fluctuate. They go up and down a bit. You know, there might be a drought, lots of animals die. There might be lots of food around, organisms increase. So, you know, in the real world, populations are constantly fluctuating up and down, you know, away from these precise mathematical models, which we talk about. Now, as I've already alluded to, sometimes species undergo population explosions. And that's a sudden, rapid increase in the abundance of a species in a particular area. So these population explosions are caused by a number of things sometimes. It can be caused by the animal reproducing lots, so, you know, it may be able to reproduce in really large numbers to result in an explosion. It may have to do with the abiotic environment, so sometimes the abiotic environment might change and become more favourable, and that might result in an increase in food so that a particular organism can get more food, and then again they can increase in numbers. It can sometimes be related to predators or lack of predators. So if an organism doesn't have any predators in a particular area, the population can explode to large numbers. And it can also relate to dispersal of the organism, so where it lives. So if an organism spreads into a new area, maybe one that it hasn't been into before, it may be able to, you know, have a population explosion because it might be able to take advantage of that new environment that it's in. Now, humans sometimes do introduce new species into environments that they've never been in before. And often that introduced species becomes a serious pest. For example, the rabbit was introduced to Australia, and the rabbit in Australia, certainly central parts of Australia, has become a pretty serious pest. Another classic example of an introduced species becoming a pest in Australia is the cane toad. So this was introduced and it's blown out to, you know, enormous numbers, particularly in northern Australia. And this is basically because it's got no natural predators in the country. So it came here and it's got things to eat, but nothing eats it. So it's been able to survive and reproduce in very large numbers. And it's now a really, really bad pest in this country. Now, if an introduced species does become a pest, it's best to use a biological control to limit the growth of that organism. For example, the prickly pear in Queensland was an introduced species, and then it became a pest. So, you know, it began growing wildly and you know, grew to very large numbers. So what biologists did, or ecologists did, was they introduced a moth from Argentina to eat the prickly pear. And that worked really well. So it really limited the distribution of the prickly pear, you know, this cactus, which had become a weed in Queensland. So that's a great example of a successful biological control. But if you are going to use a biological control to try and limit the distribution of a species, you've got to make sure you do lots of research first. So you've got to research the ecology of the pest species, and also the controlling agent, and the environment where it's all going to happen. And if you don't do the right research, it might all go wrong. And this is, you know, kind of like I started to say before, this is what happened with the cane toad. So the cane toad was actually introduced into Queensland, Australia, to eat the cane beetle, because the cane beetle was eating these sugarcane crops. So the cane toad did eat that cane beetle a bit, but it also ate lots of other things. So what happened then is that the cane toad itself became a pest. So like I said, cane toad's got no predators in Australia, and it's now in plague proportions, and you know, we're struggling to do anything about it. So you've really got to make sure you research the organisms in question first before you try and introduce a biological control into an ecosystem. And that brings episode 22 of the VCE Biology Podcast to a close. My name's Mr. Barlow, and thank you very much for listening.